My special guest today is Christine Short. She is the VP of Research at Wall Street Horizon, where they are focused on publishing insights using corporate event data. A corporate earnings expert with 15 years of experience, Christine's research has been widely featured in the financial news outlets, including appearances on networks such as Yahoo Finance, Cheddar TV, and CNBC. Wall Street Horizon is a TMX company. They provide institutional traders and investors with the most accurate and comprehensive forward-looking event data, including earnings calendars, dividend dates, option expiration dates, splits, investor conferences, and more. They cover 9,500 companies worldwide, and they offer more than 40 corporate event types via a range of delivery methods, from machine-readable files to API solutions and streaming feeds. But ultimately, what they do is ensure that their clients don't miss out on any events that will cause volatility in their portfolios. So welcome to the show, Christine. It's wonderful to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Can you start off by telling the audience a little bit about these corporate event dates? Like, what are they? I know it's your core offering. I know all about it, but like, why should people even care? And why is this the centerpiece of your business?
Yeah, so let me, like you said, let me just start by answering the most basic question. What is a corporate event? What do we consider a corporate event? You mentioned we cover almost 40 of these things for almost 10,000 stocks. And so what we consider a corporate event is anything a company hosts, sponsors, attends, broadcasts. So think things like earnings call, we're in the midst of Q4 earnings season right now. Dividends announcements, M&A, buyback announcements, investor conferences, shareholder meetings, which we have a big shareholder meeting season coming later in May and June. And so it's any way the company is going to disclose information about themselves. There can be a number of reasons for this. We've seen an expansion of event types. So we keep adding to that 40 event types because there are new ways companies disclose, whether we see, summits, workshops, seminars. Those are kind of the newer ones. And a lot of this expansion has to do with regulatory practices, MiFID I, MiFID II, and really the need for companies to have greater transparency into what they're doing, when they're doing it. Also, I think the decreasing role of brokerage research companies want to go right to the institutional investors and disclose the information themselves. So we're just seeing more ways, and I can say like social media, different ways that they're disclosing information about themselves. So that's what we consider corporate events. That's mainly what we track. That's our core data set. Why do you need to be aware that these things happen? Well, you kind of said it in the intro. You don't want to miss things, right? That's when you lose money. So again, we consider this to be core because you need to know when a company you cover is making some sort of announcement, when they're participating in a conference. These are volatility-inducing events. And there are things that you typically at some of these events, you're not going to hear the information anywhere else. So if you miss out on, a company you cover speaking at a conference, you might not hear that information anywhere else. You might hear it later in a news source, but you might be too late at that point. So, and the last thing, if you're running a trading or risk strategy, you don't want to be surprised that an event happened. It should have been on your radar. For some reason, it wasn't. Again, we like to help our clients make money, but most importantly, not lose money because these are potentially market-moving inflection points. And so that's kind of why, it sounds boring, like, events data, like, everyone kind of knows that these things are happening. It's more often than not people can miss them because there are so many different types of events out there where companies are disclosing very important information about themselves.
Yeah, it's a ton of data points. If you think about almost 10,000 companies with 40 different types of events going on for each of them, it probably would be impossible for someone to keep track of all that on their own. Is that the situation that you'd be in if you didn't have a solution like Wall Street Horizon? Would you just be kind of like only able to follow a few companies or maybe missing things?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, look, there's other providers that do some of this stuff. I think you'd be like cobbling together a solution of, different vendors providing different things. I think another big differentiator for us is many of our analysts like have been tracking these companies for years, sometimes decades. So we're very pro, like, although we have a machine learning angle, we're very pro human. And a lot of times, not only are we kind of scraping this stuff from website, this is all publicly available information, of course. The company has to announce it in some way. The good thing about having analysts that have been on board for so long is they know specifically how each company that they cover announces. So, you know, some release it in a press release, some will release it in a video on the website, Twitter might tweet it out. So it's important to understand how they're announcing this information. Also, you know, in cases where we might need to call them, we might need to email the IR department. And so there's a lot of that goes on as well with our analysts realizing, you know, my company usually has an earnings date out at this point and they haven't. Let me get in touch with the head of IR. And a lot of times we get answers that way as well.
Wow. It sounds like a lot of work on the back end to make this easy. I can definitely relate to taking something messy as 40 things for 10,000 companies, and all those companies maybe do it differently. So even just tracking it is something that takes a lot of experience. Would you say that the institutional investors and, you know, those companies that work with Wall Street Horizons, do you think one of the bigger benefits is they just don't worry about this? They have the confidence that they're not missing something because that gives them more time to focus on their research, basically?
Yeah, like why would they invest the money to build this? They could, right? Anyone could like hire a team of analysts to do this, but why would you when it already exists? We've been doing it for 20 years. We are the gold standard for corporate events. And like I said, there's such a history and a deep knowledge of how these companies report that there would be some catch-up time, I think, if you were going to do it on your own, plus the history. You know, we have 15, 16, 17 years of history for some of these companies, which, as you know, is very important to hedge funds, quant funds. So that's certainly an aspect that I think institutional investors consider when they purchase a data set like this. And just, again, like you said, the sheer manpower you would need to keep this running, to keep, you know, your logs all current and to understand that.
Yeah. If you're following along at home and you want to check it out, it's wallstreethorizon.com is the website. There's a ton more information on there. But when I'm thinking about this type of thing, should I be thinking about a calendar, like where if I'm visualizing the data that you provide, is it kind of like, hey, this is going to occur on this date, and then a week later it's this, and then next month you need to be watching out for this, kind of like that forward looking events? Is that how you think about it?
Yeah. So there's a couple different products. We obviously have a GUI, a user interface that, like you said, you can look at the calendar, you can see the events, you can have a watch list of your companies and get alerts based on, you know, what events are coming up for those companies. Most of our institutional investors take it in a feed through API, through FTP. But I think what's interesting, you mentioned a calendar. A lot of people think of this as, you know, okay, an earnings date goes on the calendar and then it's there and that's it. They like set it and forget it is what we say. The thing that differentiates us is that we update when events update. And you don't always get that with a calendar provider. It's like, okay, say, you know, Google, let's say they announced an earnings date for January 25th, and then they actually moved it. Well, you might see that now they're reporting on February 2nd or something. I'm just making up these dates. But you wouldn't see that there was a change. And so that's why we're a differentiator. We alert you to the changes in content, to the changes in dates. And there is a lot of information that can be culled from the fact that a company changed something. And I don't, that's, we're the only ones that really provide those changes. And again, make of it what you will. But I think it's important to understand when a company has moved something.
Yeah, let's dive in a little bit. I mean, I think it sounds clear if you work with data, like why you need to know these dates. When's the dividend? When's the earnings? When is the earnings calls? If you want to tune into it, like it goes on and on. You're going to miss all that if you don't have a solution like this. But yeah, let's talk a little bit beyond, it's not simple because there's so much nuance to how it's reported and collected and shared and all that. But like, talk a little bit about some of those alternative data insights that can be gained from this. You've got the core product, which is when is something happening? What's the date? Looking forward, tracking changes, that type of thing. But if we want to go beyond that, we want to talk about alternative data or signals or things like that. When a date changes, what kind of information does that provide? And what can you share with our audience about those types of data points?
So that's something we call, when you're talking about a change, corporate body language. It's a phrase that we coined to mean, you know, the nonverbal cues that a company sends to the marketplace, whether intentionally, unintentionally, and they impact volatility. So those cues refer to the changes in, you know, the timing or the content of an event. And we look at those both at a company level, but also as an aggregate level. And I think the reason it's important to be aware of those changes, there's been a bunch of academic research on it. One paper that comes to mind was out of MIT called Time Will Tell. And they actually found, and I'm going to speak specifically to earnings dates right now. They found when a company, let's say, confirms an earnings date and then subsequently changes that earnings date, whether it be later or earlier, that is highly correlated with the information they're going to give on the call. So what I mean is, if the company delays an earnings date, that's positively correlated with that company giving what they say bad news on the call. If it's advanced, it's highly correlated with good news on the call. And that can mean something different for every company. But we found that also persists with companies that maybe don't change their earnings date, but they set an earnings date that is outside of the historical range. So let's say, again, I'll say, let's say Google always reports the third week of the first quarter, they report their fourth quarter earnings. And now this year, they're actually doing it in the fourth week. Because we have almost 20 years of data, we can pick up on that change and whether or not it's significant. You know, some companies are kind of flip-flopping all the time, right? And so it's not actually significant when they do move. Some companies report always on a Wednesday, like they are very consistent. And so we can track those changes. And from that information, we can say, hey, you know what, they actually pushed their earnings date past what they would historically report. We think there might be bad news coming on the call. Is it always that case? No. Like if there's a management change, I would look into that and say, hey, you know what? They just hired a new CFO. That could be the reason for the date change. So I'm not necessarily going to call this one out. Or perhaps there's some M&A going on and we know that. That can certainly move the timing of these things. But more often than not, we found that does hold, that academic research does hold. And so I'll give just a quick example, because I thought this one was really interesting from the current earnings season that we're in, Q4 2020, Spotify. So we had kind of an alert on that. They always report on Wednesday ever since they IPO'd in 2018. This year, and they always report Q4 on a Wednesday in February specifically. This year, they moved it to a Tuesday, which happened to be January 31st. So you're like, all right, they only really moved it one day forward. Does that mean they have good news coming on the call? Well, they just let go of 6% of their workforce. So we knew that going into the report. Investors like that. They like cost cutting, right? That helps the bottom line. But we weren't quite sure what they were going to share. And then they came out on Tuesday, and yes, they actually missed estimates on the top line, missed estimates on the bottom line. Usually investors would like wig out on that, and that would be very bad. But they reported year over year monthly active user increase of 20%, which we know for these social media companies, for these streaming companies, that is the number, right? Who cares about top line? Who cares about bottom line? It's all about user growth. And the stock popped 12%. And we thought, oh, interesting. Like, that was something that we, stood out to us. Again, I wouldn't trade on that one data point. I'd use it as part of my mosaic, just understanding where the company had been, looking at the fundamentals. But I thought it was an interesting data point to show, wow, for the first time in 5 years, they have pulled their earnings date up. Does that mean they're getting ready to share good news with us? And, it makes sense. Like, if you have good news to share, you want to run out and like tell everyone right away, right? That's what the MIT paper said. It's like, yes, that human aspect totally makes sense. Whereas if you have bad news to share, you might kind of like think about it a little bit and hold off on sharing it. So that's kind of the same idea behind like how these companies make decisions of when to confirm an earnings date.
It's funny because I'm picturing like a child who doesn't want to tell their parents that something went wrong and they're just like procrastinating it. But, applied the same psychological factors maybe apply to these really very grown up institutions where the folks that are running them are going, oh, we did good. We want to share that as quickly as possible. We did bad. I don't want to tell anybody that we screwed up. But I like what you were saying about Spotify, because it's not just as simple as, are we sharing early or are we sharing late? And then, okay, well, that if it's sharing early, then, we should buy the stock because it's going to pop. It's more complicated. Is that what you have your team at Wall Street Horizon doing, is kind of like not just tracking the dates, and that's a lot of work, I'm sure, but also to understand the nuance behind like what else is happening with that company that can give us the clearest insight about what that date change might mean?
Yeah, so I head up research. That's kind of my job, to dig through the data and find these kind of interesting nuggets. And again, like, you could have all the data in the world. You can't really anticipate how investors are going to react after one of these events happens, right? And we've seen it, especially in the last year, with so much volatility. Like, you just can't, sometimes it doesn't make sense, right? Like, well, why did that stock go up so much? Like, what were investors looking at? And again, like, the numbers you deem to be most important in an earnings report might be different than mine. And again, it's a company basis. So yeah, I try to look for these nuggets, but I also try to look at the fundamentals. I try to look at, you know, what's going on in the industry, what's going on with peers, like, what's the trajectory been? I look at forward-looking estimates, and I kind of try to, when I put together a note, figure out, like, again, not giving recommendations. That's, we don't do that. But saying, here's kind of like what the picture is. On top of that, our data is telling us this. And so leading them and kind of, you know, adding a little more color to that picture. Again, without saying, oh, yeah, buy, sell, hold based on this. But yeah, like, it's, again, it's a, especially in this environment, it's a bit of a tough job because, you know, someone, as anyone knows, which is why most people aren't picking single stocks these days, but it's just really to give you a little more color and insight on that company and something that might be, you know, going on in the background.
Yeah. An example that comes to mind is that every time we get good news about the economy growing, that means that inflation might be higher. And so the Federal Reserve
Fed's
might
raise rates.
Yeah. And so because of the good news about the economy, stocks do poorly. So yeah, that's I think that's very cool. You have a lot of a hard job to anticipate the reaction, understand it.
Right. Jobs, think, like, you, another point is jobs are out this week, and it's like, oh God, it's like, you want jobs to be good. You know, traditionally you want to see that jobs are growing, wages are growing, unemployment stays relatively low, but we also know people are going to sell because that means, oh God, we're going to see rates go higher. So you're right. It doesn't always make sense, but so a bit of a tricky job, but we're just here to kind of point out, like, we don't want you to miss this. Here's something the company did. This is out of the ordinary. And so you must, if you cover Spotify, for example, you should know this.
If you're going to outperform as an investor or an analyst, you have to be thinking in a way that someone else isn't. You have to have different insights. And that's the value I think a lot of institutional investors want to provide, is that they can, when they have all the data at their fingertips, they can analyze it in a way that makes, that gives some insight and some forward-looking understanding of how the market will react better than others will. Can you talk about those users that are using your data? Are these mostly, like, it's a lot of sophistication to digest earnings dates and information about earnings dates, like, and a lot of focus time, I think, dedicated into the research. Are these the folks that use your data? Is it mostly institutional investors, the kind of folks who just do nothing but digest this data all day long?
Yeah, it's a good portion of it. We also have quite a few redistributors that are using this on their platforms, third parties, you know, putting it in a calendar. But that deeper data set, that alternative data, I would say is mostly institutional investors, like you said, looking to get an edge, options traders, equities traders. You know, on the options side, I'd say it's folks that don't want to miss things. They want to make sure that they are aware something's coming up because that is going to cause a great deal of volatility for their names. Equities traders, wealth management. So yeah, a bunch of institutional investors that just need to know that these things are going on, whether it's, you know, on the risk end of things, whether it's on, you know, earning more alpha. So it really kind of runs gamut, but I would say that's where most of the focus is.
Yeah. Do you think you're seeing any change in your customer base towards more like individual users, maybe through those redistributors who are getting more sophisticated? After coming in, you know, in the last few years over the pandemic, this like Wall Street Bets thing that everybody talks about, do you think those users are starting to find their way to your data as they try to become more sophisticated, like individuals that might have historically just not been active investors, but now are buying and selling stocks and wanting to do more research? Do you think they're going to find their way to Wall Street Horizon data?
Yeah, I think it's funny. Like a while back, we would have taken like a retail request and just kind of like put it into, you know, somewhere. Okay, this is not our client. Obviously, we don't really have a retail product, so we kind of like stash it away. And but you're right, there is this kind of you know, what we would consider like a sophisticated retailer, sophisticated non-professional, or someone that knows to how to code. We have an API through Interactive Brokers, and that's the level of user I would say. This is someone who is sophisticated. They are using an API. They are ingesting it. They are coding. And they are building algorithms on this. Is it their main job? No, they might, you know, have another day job, but they are trading in this way. And so you're right. There is sort of this middle ground that you maybe didn't see in years past. It was very clear, like institutional versus retail, and you're either one or you're other, or maybe you have a product offering for both. But now I think with this rise of a more sophisticated day trader or someone that is coding their own models, I think there is an opportunity there. And like I said, through our third party, through redistributors like Interactive Brokers, we are finding those folks that are making use of this data.
I've been one of those traders who is a little bit technical, you know, kind of a beginner. And I think that one of the biggest challenges I ever had was like, when is the dividend coming? Like, what's the date going to be for that? Like, just simple, you know, like if you're a dividend, you're looking forward at that as an individual, your analysis is going to hit a brick wall. You know, you're going to be stuck regardless of how sophisticated you are. I think if you try to do a good job without forward dates and knowing what's coming up with the stocks you're invested or interested in, I think you're toast. So yeah, I think you're going to see more of that as well.
Yeah. The dividend real quick, just to comment on, we get a lot of incoming requests for dividends, not just dates, but I need to know when I need to know when they suspend. I need to know when they resume. And that information is hard to find. You know, it's like if you're following high dividend stocks and you can't figure out when they've suspended or when they're, have resumed paying, that's going to be a problem for you. And like you said, for some reason, that is hard. That's a hard data set to find.
I think it's a common data point, especially for retail traders, to be looking at dividends. And tough segment of it. Can you talk a little bit about to the folks who are looking for data providers, what they should be looking for, whether they're an individual or an institution and they're trying to have a more sophisticated analysis, more automated process, they need dates, they need other data types. What do you think makes a good vendor versus a bad vendor? And what are some of the pitfalls that data buyers can run into when looking out there in the wild west of the data market?
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of things. I mean, the first, and it's fairly obvious, like make sure the data is good. And that's not always so obvious because there's a lot of ways that it can be bad. I think there's been a lot of high profile cases with vendors that were either, you know, bad data, meaning like it was kind of collected incorrectly, maybe not on purpose, but there was some laziness there, or maybe it was intentional and the data was not supposed to be collected, or they didn't have permissions, or it was illegal in some way. And so data buyers need to be aware for compliance reasons. Like when we have institutions test our data, there is a whole like legal aspect of it to make sure how we have collected. Does it run afoul of their compliance or not? And there's, you know, personally identifiable information, consumer privacy, this all starts to come into play, right? And it's really big for data buyers to avoid. One way we avoid it is by collecting primary and publicly sourced data. So this is all publicly available. It's the company announces it. That's the only way we know it. And it's primary sourced, meaning we get it from the company. We don't get it from a third party. We don't go through news articles. You know, we're not getting it from anywhere but the company itself. And so, you know, that's what they mean. Did they post it on their website? Where was it? You know, we know all of those intimate details. Like I mentioned, did the chairwoman post this? Who, you know, who replies from IR and when? And did they delay an event? You know, so we know all the nuances of how they're posting it, how to get it. And, you know, as a data buyer, you want to go directly to the company for a couple of reasons. One, like I said, for compliance, you need to have this publicly sourced. You know, if a data buyer calls you and says, I see that you said Disney suspended their dividend, I need to be able to say where I found that, right? I can't just say like, oh, yeah, I saw that somewhere. I need to be able to go to the source and say it was in this press release and published on this day and give them that information. But there's another big reason that you want to go for primary and publicly sourced, and that's for accuracy. Oh, did they suspend their dividend? Well, yes, because the company said so, right? So there's never any question about accuracy. So I'd say that's the number one thing. Like I said, so many in recent memory situations have come up where the data hasn't been clean. They haven't, you know, a company's been collecting stuff they shouldn't have been. They've been dishonest about the collection process. And so we are just very, you know, straightforward with how we do that. And we avoid a lot of that by going through the actual company themselves and only reporting things that we see them reporting or announcing.
Yep. And I think that's probably why you've become such a gold standard of forward-looking data for the financial world. Do you think that people run afoul of these things, or even companies exist that don't do such a good job of legal and compliance and checking things like that and going directly to the source? Is it everybody just trying to save money on the cost of creating these and licensing these data sets? Is that what would be like the temptation to do something a little more haphazardly?
Sure. It could be a cost thing. It could be, I mean, like I said, some of it's intentional. I think of App Annie, you know, they, to get more sales, did something they were not, you know, public or customer information that they were not supposed to be releasing to data buyers, that they did because it made for a better product. And I, you know, it's amazing that people think they're going to somehow get away with this, but yeah, it could be a cost thing. It could be a, this makes for a better data offering, inexperienced. I don't know. Like, yeah. So I guess that all probably goes back to cost cutting, because maybe you're not getting the most experienced analysts, collecting your data, but it can be a number of things. And I think what I've noticed is that data buyers have really beefed up on the legal end of things. And, you know, you're filling out like 40-page due diligence questionnaires now, 40-page, 100-page, whatever, because they need to make sure for compliance reasons that they have like dotted their I's, crossed their T's. And that's fine. We have all of this readily available. And like I said, we avoid some of that because we are just going right to the company source. But sure, you're going to see, you know, more data buyers really trying to protect that end.
Yeah, I filled out a few of those due diligence questionnaires myself, so I can definitely relate. Yeah, exactly. Not to be too punny, but can you tell us what's next for Wall Street Horizon? Like, what types of things are working on that are upcoming that we can look forward to?
Well, one thing I'll say is, and you mentioned in the beginning, we just recently were acquired by TMX Group in November. The parent company of Toronto Stock Exchange and some other exchanges. So we're really excited to integrate them and have kind of a larger footprint. And our data set is global. So those 10,000 equities you mentioned, we're already global, but looking to even push that a little more, looking to, you know, expand our user base as well. So that's one thing we're excited about. The other thing that I've worked personally on is this idea of the date breaks factor. I mentioned the changing of the dates and the alternative data that we collect around that. Is the late earnings report index, or the LEARI. And this is a way that we, you know, date breaks factor just focuses company by company, that Spotify example I gave. But how do you aggregate that? How can I go into like an earnings season and know, is this going to be a good one? Is it going to be bad? How are companies feeling? And it's almost like in a way, a sentiment indicator that tracks the number of outlier late companies versus the number of outlier early companies. And whether that's historically above or below the norm. So we set a baseline of 100. Anytime the LEARI, we call it, is the reading is above 100, it means more companies are delaying their earnings. And you might kind of want to question that. If it's below 100, more companies are bringing early earnings earlier. And so we refer to it as an uncertainty index. So if the LEARI is really high, that to me says corporate America is very uncertain heading into this earnings season. Not necessarily that it's going to be a bad earnings season, but companies are a little bit unsure of the information they're going to share and how that's going to go over with investors. And now we've been doing this for 3 or 4 quarters now. And what I find really interesting is when we started tracking this back in Q2 of 2022, the LEARI was over 100. So we were like, whoa, companies are feeling super uncertain with how things are going, how the rest of the year is going to be. We had so many headwinds from supply chain still coming into effect, their inflation, you know, this, you know, talk of potential recession. So everyone was kind of on edge. But as we've gone on, like, nothing's really fallen apart, right? You talk about how strong the economy has been. And so we keep going and we keep seeing like GDP is great. Jobs are great. And so as we've moved from second quarter to third quarter to now fourth quarter earnings, our Leary index coming into this quarter was something like 68. It was the lowest it's been in 5 years, meaning companies were not as uncertain. And does that mean they think 2023 is going to be great? No, that's not what I take from it. What I take from a low Leary reading is they've adjusted. They know what to expect. We've seen all the cost cutting going on, right? Mark Zuckerberg yesterday talked about efficiency and becoming more efficient, right? The markets loved that. So companies are learning in this environment how to move, what adjustments they need to make, and so they are less certain with kind of the future outlook for their earnings picture in 2023. So that's something we've been working on that we're really excited because I think you look at all these sort of sentiment indexes and whether it be consumer or on the corporate side or whatnot, and this I think gives you a really clear idea of the value of the changes in the dates and what companies are actually putting out there on the marketplace that they might not know about. Because we can all read an earnings report and the language can be like super optimistic, but it doesn't give us a great idea of what's actually going on at that company. So I think this is just, again, another data point for looking into the future, how overall, what's the financial health of corporate America right now? And that's the Leary Index.
Wow, super cool. Thanks for telling me about it. I'm excited to see where that goes, and if it is predictive of kind of like a industry-wide body language, like what are we looking at across all these companies? It's pretty fascinating. This whole conversation was really fascinating. Christine, thanks for being on the show, and telling us all about Wall Street Horizon.
Thanks so much for having me. This has been really great. Hopefully helpful for your listeners.